It's the California Wine Country Podcast with Steve Jackson and Dan Berger. We taste, we laugh, we learn.
It's California Wine Country, brought to you by Bottle Barn. Dan Berger, of course, and our guest today is Daryl Miller from Dehlinger Winery. Daryl, good to see you.
Good to see you.
Well, yeah, grab a microphone there.
Oh, here we go. I'm on.
We'll get closer.
Oh, got to get closer than that? All right. How's that? Is that good?
That's perfect.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I know that Tom Dehlinger planted an initial 14 acres of grapes in 1975.
Yeah.
Tell the story of Dehlinger.
Well,
beyond that.
You know, 1975, I met Tom in 1981. I've been friends with the family since that time. I actually lived on the property for 5 years. So I didn't know Tom when he started in 75, but I've known him all these years since. And have witnessed much of the replanting from that second and third and fourth and fifth, and they continue with the two daughters running the winery,
right,
and replanting even as we speak. They've replanted this year. So the Octagon, one of the original old blocks, has been replanted. So, you know, it's been an ongoing, it's an evolution. They've never gotten big. They've just gotten better and better and better. I think that's the way I like to think of them. They're always looking for just to trim it up just a little bit.
Who's the winemaker now?
Eva, the youngest daughter, is the winemaker.
Cool.
And the next youngest daughter, or the two youngest daughters, Carmen, is in charge of sales and marketing. She's my direct supervisor.
And so what is your role now at Dehlinger?
My role is I'm the old guy who can go out and talk, I guess. They're very quiet people, and they like their privacy. And I've known him all these years. I have a lot of stories I can't tell you on the radio. But in any case, I'm able to go out and sell wine, help the people sell wine, look at distribution points and things like that all around the United States.
And give us your history in the wine world. How did you come about all
this?
Well,
let's see. I started about 50 years ago. I started in Seattle and started up there in wholesale after I got out of the Air Force. I moved to Seattle, started in service, started going out selling wine in Seattle. And then I came to California in 1975. Actually, I worked in the Bay Area for a guy that Dan knows, Mr. Ed Everett.
Wonderful guy.
Wonderful human being.
Yeah.
Well, he was my first salesperson job in California. And then I worked with him for 5 years, and then I moved to Sonoma County and started my own wine brokerage. So brokers at that time were sort of rare. They didn't have a lot of brokers. There were only two or three distributors in the state of California, actually.
Wow.
Yeah, really, yeah. And then, so brokers would do the job. They would get a few different wineries together. In my case, I got some really good wineries together, including Iron Horse and Laurel Glen and Lytton Springs and Camus and Schramsberg and some pretty good stuff that I got to represent, William Wheeler. Anyway, so I was selling all those wines, and Tom and I belonged to the same tasting group. So in 1982, I met Tom in a tasting group with I was the only non-winemaker in the tasting group. Julia Iantosca, Bob Iantosca, Phyllis Zuzunas, all kinds of winemakers that Dan knows. And I was in the tasting group. And one day, after a couple years of tasting with them, Tom, I'd been to the winery, tasted wine, drank wine with him. I'd asked to sell his brand over and over and over, and he had said, no, I'm fine. We have somebody selling our wine, and he's doing a good job. I said, okay. But one day, about 3 years after I met him in 1985, he said, you know, we bought the property next door, and so we're going to be moving, because they'd already had three children. And the house on top of the hill is not a really big house. It's an octagon. It's beautiful. And I wound up living in the octagon for 5 years. And all during that time, I was not selling his wine, and I kept asking and asking and asking. Anyway, long story longer is that I never got to sell the wine back then, but I always was I was a salesman. He got a free salesman because I was always selling it. but the fact is that I never got to sell it and work for the company, and now 35 years later, I get to come back and help the two daughters and Tom and Carol sell the wines. So
cool.
It's kind of serendipitous.
Unfortunately, for the first time in 12 years, we don't have any wine glasses available because somebody locked us out of the office where we keep the wine glasses. I have no idea what's going on.
We won't be talking about the color then. We'll be talking about the flavors.
Yes, we will.
So and we're going to start.
It's Dixie Cup time, folks.
This will make the Dehlingers really happy. So now we're going to start. Now I'm going to go backwards a little bit. I like to pour red wine before I pour the Chardonnay.
Really?
Yes.
Because most people don't.
No, they don't. But, you know, I learned
it. Well, it's a tradition in Burgundy in France.
That's where I learned it.
Really?
Yeah, it is.
Red wine first.
Well, because in Burgundy, they're very proud of their Chardonnays and how rich they are. They consider them to be like red wine in a certain way. And Burgundy in France is typically not as heavy. So they serve the lighter wine first, which is red. And then they go to the white.
Well, I'm sure they all use Dixie cups in France, too.
This is fabulous.
Well, let me tell you that between the two Pinot Noirs, this is the more forward of the two wines. This is the Gold Ridge. And the wines are named for the soil types that they're in at the property. Mm. The Gold Ridge tends to be more fruit forward, more pretty, you know, voluptuous kind of thing, where it's all this pretty fruit and stuff. And then we'll come to the Altamont, which is grown in this very red, rich soil that is much more restrained. The wines are it's a bigger Pinot Noir.
So this hit my palate big time.
This
with
is
all
this
sorts
is
of
pure raspberry aromatics,
yeah.
And it's
the
very
fruit
similar.
Is unbelievable.
Elaine Bella and I were on a panel together one time years ago. She's a great chef,
cups.
And she was making raspberry jam, and she put a pound of raspberries into a pot, and I smelled that.
Elaine Bell was quite a caterer.
Yeah,
we can't take a look at it because we're using Dixie.
Well, you
cups.
Can see, you'll see how much darker the second one is, believe it or not. So, are you down to the bottom in that one there? Mm.
Yeah, Dan, tell me why I love this wine so much. This is an amazing Pinot Noir.
I think the most amazing thing about this
gorgeous.
Is how the flavors come through in the aftertaste exactly the way the aroma does. The aroma smells one way, then you get this thing in the mouth, and it's just fabulous, but it finishes up like the aroma was, with this dark raspberry kind of
pretty.
Smell.
It's
gorgeous.
It's really pretty wine. I mean,
God,
I would agree with that.
I wouldn't say that. That doesn't mean it's not serious just because it's pretty. Because you can be pretty and serious. You can
Believe
be pretty
me.
Serious.
That's me.
That's you. Absolutely.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, and I see you've got Guy's ring on there. Is that from Guy?
No.
He's got one of those.
Yeah, I'm sure he does. It's a Keith Richards skull ring.
Oh, that's
I've been called the Keith Richards of Sonoma County Radio, so I'm just trying to live up to it.
Well, I loved Keith Richards.
How is Jackson still alive? Well, I don't know. Okay, so...
So, more intense.
The first one was a 17.
Gold Ridge. Right,
and
that's right.
This one is a 16.
16, that's correct. So we're tasting in the intensity order, and the 16 vintage was a more restrained vintage to begin with. You'll get this wine's got a lot more body to it.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, it's a little tighter.
Yes, tighter.
But I think this is one of the great examples of how vintages do play a role. And I think the most important thing for most consumers, which has been lost over the last decade or so, is pay attention to those vintages. They're not all the same. They really do.
Even off the same property that's farmed exactly the same way and handled the same way and processed the same way. But there's an intensity to this one. The other one was lifted and fruity and pretty. This one's more, you know, a little bit tighter. And it's got a lot of great flavors. They're just not that, it's not that berry, raspberry kind of thing going on.
That blows up in your mouth.
Maybe not.
I have to say I like the Gold Ridge better, but this is very good, too.
Well, I understand. And there's a lot of people who feel that way, and I think that that's okay. I mean, it's a fruit-forward wine. But when you get serious about holding it and drinking it a little bit later, giving it some air, I'll probably leave this with you or Dan, and you'll take it home and drink it with some food particularly, it's just, you know, I mean, I love both the Pinots, but I do love that one better, the Altamont.
The Altamont with food, I can see that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. Fabulous, right. Fabulous wine. Right. I think it's really wonderful that Sonoma County has reached the point where not only within different appellations are we beginning to see, say, for example, a difference between Petaluma Gap and Sonoma Coast and so forth, but we're also beginning to see how each property has divided itself up and found a little sub-micro climate areas.
Right. Well, you know, that property I lived on for 5 years and been in the county for that a long time. It is a very unique piece of property. he was it was amazing when he found this, and of course then he got cuttings from Joe Swan, and he's got the Winty clone Chardonnay coming up here in just a second, you know, which is the very tiny shot berries. You got another clean cup.
And you're also one of the nice.
Yeah, we got all the Dixie cups you need there.
I see that.
One of the nice.
Now let's be careful. These are not actually Dixie cups. These are these beautiful foam. Ooh. And they have stripes on them, just like his outfit that he's wearing. You know, they're sort of coordinated to his outfit.
Yeah.
There you go.
I always wear my pajamas to work.
It's a great outfit.
Okay. What year is the Chard?
So this is the new release. This is the 18 Chardonnay.
Okay. Twelve years we've been doing this thing, and we've never had to use Dixie cups.
I asked him as soon as I came in. I said, "Was I supposed to bring the glasses?"
Yeah. Well,
and you know what? A salesman is always supposed to be prepared. I failed.
Well, little did we know we'd get locked out of our room. I know who did it. I'm not going to say, but
that blonde lady was here.
No. They're all cool.
This really shows the area you're in. This is right up against the Laguna.
You had the Chardonnay earlier. You tasted it a little bit earlier because you were, you know, wanting to refresh your palate after your long, you know, fired conversations. And you just taste it again now after those two reds. It's kind of interesting, isn't it? Does it taste any different than
it
the first time?
It tastes a little different.
It does.
I can't explain how.
Well, I think when you taste a white wine after red wines, Dan, what's it accentuates the fruitiness of the white wine.
One thing that red wine will do, most red wine, will leave your palate with a slight layer of tannin.
Exactly.
That is a buffer against white wine tannins, which are in Chardonnay. And you don't necessarily appreciate those. You like them. You put up with them. But when you can have a glass, just a tiny glass of red wine before you drink the white always tastes better because you've had a little bit of effect of
the
red wine. Is
that why they do that in France?
That's exactly why they do it.
Started with the white wines here.
They do it to sell wine because it does show off. Look, the red wines are going to show off the red wine thing. But the white wine, if you start with it, you're not getting the other side of the coin to sort of compare it against, you know? And so that's I learned that when I went to Burgundy several times when I was with Nin Wholesale.
Tom, talk about this Chard.
I think the most impressive thing about this Chardonnay is that it really displays its region very, very nicely. It's the Laguna, but you're above the floodplain.
Exactly.
You're above that.
Oh, yeah.
So you don't get as much fog. Your fog probably burns off sooner than most other people.
Yes, right.
I would think you're only about, 30 feet higher?
No, we're actually about 60 feet higher.
Okay, well, even there, even that alone gives you some little benefit.
Well, and actually pieces of the property are probably 75 or 80. So if you look at the base where the road comes up the hill there and the bottoms.
And the Laguna is a beautiful property in itself, but you've got the best of both worlds. Because not only do you have gold-rich soil up there, but you also have all this beautiful development that's above the fog.
Right, right.
It is California Wine Country, brought to you by Bottle Barn. Dan Berger, of course, here, and Daryl Miller from Daylinger Winery. And it's mostly, explain how people can get Daylinger wines.
Well, you know, the website, you can go to the website. Okay, they've been in business 45 years. They have a very good following. It's a very small winery. Let's talk about the numbers here for a minute. The winery only makes between 7,000 and 8,000 cases. They grow.
Wow.
Yeah, that's it.
That's small.
That is small.
Yeah.
Consistently small. And so each one of the wines we've tasted are less than, most of them are between 1,000 and 1,500 cases per varietal. So there's not a lot. There's some specialty single vineyard stuff, vineyard designates that they make, and those go only to their wine direct consumers. We do have some restaurants and retail. Of course, we don't have too many restaurants during the COVID-19, but the wines are available in marketplaces and around the California, and as well as in a few other states, very few. And that's one of the things that I've been doing is opening just a few more markets. We opened Colorado because we wanted to have a little bit of wine there. We're in New York. So we're in a few other markets, but very small amounts of wine.
And it's Russian River, right?
Totally. It's the Appalachians Russian River. Yeah.
Yeah.
They actually are within the Green Valley appellation within the Russian River, but Tom prefers, and Eva, the winery has decided that, that Green Valley was not what they ever wanted to have on their label. So they are in the Russian River appellation.
It's hard to explain.
It is. It's a very difficult situation. But yes, Russian River.
Dan, talk about Dehlinger and your history.
If somebody wanted to ask, somebody asked me, use one word to describe Dehlinger wines, I would say structure. There's a balance and structure to the way these wines have always been from the 1970s on. I still have wines in the cellar from the 80s, and I'm really excited about how these wines have come along over the years because there is a personality that's driven from the soil and from the climate region, and without those pieces, these wines couldn't exist. And this 2014 Cabernet that we just opened, this
You're
is
right.
a Dehlinger 2014 Cabernet Sauvignon, still available. What a bargain. And what's amazing about this wine is if this wine had been made in the Napa Valley, somebody would charge $200.
Exactly, exactly.
But this is, what is this price?
$65.
$65, just unbelievable. Sonoma County does a lot of good Cabernet, let's just be realistic. But this one is really different because it's from Russian River Valley. You don't see Russian River Valley Cabernet.
I think
very
we're
much.
One of the few producers in that make a Cabernet with grapes grown in the Russian River Valley.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well,
for
a long time, Gary Farrell did some Cabernets
right.
from this area
right,
and
right.
were phenomenal wines. But then he retired and their Cabernet program sort of evaporated.
Yeah. Well, so, they got very large. You know,
yeah, they well, they got large company, and yeah. they're making fabulous wines up there, but no Cabernet anymore. So I still have a 99 Gary Farrell Cabernet in our cellar, which is in pretty good shape.
Well, the other thing that's really important about these wines is clonal selection. I mean, the evolution of the clonal selections at this winery is amazing. They've stayed with the Winti clone on the Chardonnay. They have Martini clone. They've got Swan clone for the Pinot. They have some of the greatest clones that have ever been grown in California that they use for their wood to grow the grapes.
The other thing about Dehlinger, which is really an important point for the consumer, is that they tend very strongly toward looking back at their previous wines and making sure that the house style is never...
Consistency. Yeah,
yeah, there's a consistency there. This is really reliable, and the flavors are always from that same property.
Right.
And when you find a Dehlinger wine in your cellar that was... Maybe you forgot it. I find them periodically myself. They're fine. They just live forever.
They're
quality stuff.
You know, they pride themselves on that, the consistency. You know, it's like they're not trying to reinvent the wheel. They have the wheel, and the wheel is rolling nicely for them and has been for 45 years.
Again, it's Dehlinger, DehlingerWinery.com. You need to check them out. I love the fact that Tom and Carol's daughters, Carmen and Eva, are overseeing the day-to-day operation of both the winery and the vineyard, and Eva is the winemaker?
Yes, correct.
Wow.
And general manager.
And how long has she been making wine?
She studied in Burgundy. She's been at it for about 16 years now.
Wow.
And she took over pretty much in the management of the winery in 2000, both of them in 2008, I believe. Now, I might be wrong on that, but I'm pretty sure it's been about 12 years.
And Carmen's doing the
sales and marketing.
Marketing,
right.
Yeah.
She's a fabulously person. She's just a sweet and very wonderful person.
And Tom and Carol are both...
Oh, they're still involved.
No, with us?
Carol is the gardener supreme. The property is amazing. They grow so much produce. They give away humongous amounts of produce during the fall to their members of their groups, the
nice.
Clubs.
Nice.
Yeah, you come and you can pick up all this produce. And Tom is still day-to-day, absolutely, over within the arena of the two ladies.
How old is he now?
He's the same age as me, so we're not going to talk about it. But he's younger than Dan.
95?
Younger than Dan.
We're all younger than Dan. I'm an old guy.
Wait, can I cough now?
Yeah. Okay. I'm still younger than Dan.
Yeah.
And I'm an old guy.
We're both born in 1947, so do the math.
Okay. 52 for me.
Yeah, yeah. I knew you were young.
I'm just a punk kid.
You're looking good, actually, for 68 or something. Yeah,
yeah, I'll be 68 in December.
Yeah, cool.
I wish my body knew that. Body would go, no, you're fine, Steve.
Well, yeah.
I'll be ahead of you already in 2 days.
2 days. It's his big day.
68?
69.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. 69. In your dreams, Dan.
Well, happy birthday, dude.
Thank you, sir. I'm celebrating with the Cabernet.
Daylinger, they do. And how many wines you folks making now? I mean,
actually, you know, there's a few single vintages. So these are the four flagship wines, actually. So the Pinot Noirs, two of them, from the different soil types, the mm-hmm. Gold Ridge and the Altamont, mm-hmm. and then the Chardonnay, and then Cabernet is always made. Those four are always made, and then Syrah. And I didn't bring the Syrah. I love the Syrah. That's why I didn't bring it.
I really like Syrah, too.
Oh, shoot. I wish I didn't.
No, that's okay.
One of my very favorite wines, period.
I've liked it for a long time, and some people I don't like Syrah.
I've made
because there was a lot of bad Syrah made.
Oh, that's true. Very true.
Right,
too warm a climate. I've made very big arguments in favor of cold climate Syrah. Very few people appreciate what I'm doing because they say, well, we can't drink them. Huh? You're not supposed to drink him. Put him away for 2 years. I call him
Dan Lay It Down Burger.
I like that. You're absolutely right. Unless it's Riesling. And even then, he lays it down.
It's down. I got a 10, 12-year-old. Rieslings are fabulous.
So, the winery, you guys aren't able to, at this point, do what many wineries are doing, which is, outside tasting and continuing that.
They have the ability to do it, actually. They're rebuilding the tasting room. It's a very intimate space, and they've redesigned the tasting room, put windows and stuff in it, and it opens up. But I don't believe right now that that's the plan, because, like I said, you know, we have many, 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 and we don't do clubs, okay? It's not a club. You become a family part of the thing. And we have people that have been buying Daylinger wines that are on the list for 40 years. On the list, 40 years.
Wow.
But then you can apply. If you go online to the website, you can see and you can say, I would like to join and be an offer if there's any wine left for offering. So, and there, we're only taking about 20% of the wine to offer to the outsourcing on and off premise.
This is a very rare situation. Back in the 80s and early 90s, there was through the 90s, in fact, there was a lot of wine that was on allocation. The phrase allocation used to basically say you can't have any, basically. And what ends up happening was too much wine was produced. Too many people were not interested in higher pricing. So a lot of the allocation wines ended up not being sold. What you guys are into is true allocation. There is no, if you don't have any wine, you're not going to sell it. So you have to be very careful how you actually market every wine.
Well, and we always, the winery has always respected and appreciated historical customers. In other words, if you've been buying wine, let me tell you, you're going to get first shot at the wine.
That makes sense.
It does make sense. It's a very reasonable, honorable way to offer wine. And if somebody new wants to come in and there's wine, then they should have a chance at it. And I'm in wholesale, which is the side that I'm in. There's only a small percentage of this winery's wine because there's not that much wine. But they do want to be available in some markets where you can go to a restaurant, you can go to a retailer, you can buy a bottle of wine and take it home and drink it at your house.
Well, you know? Tom, I really believe that Tom did not understand what he was into at the very beginning, because I moved into Sonoma County in 1986, and in 1986, you couldn't get Daylinger wine if you wanted it. You just couldn't get it.
Really?
He didn't make a lot.
He was making a lot. I mean, you know, basically, that could be the case. I think that was mainly amount how much wine was made.
But if you found it on a shelf,
or it could be because who you were. I'm not sure.
Yeah, if you found it on a shelf, you better buy it because you won't see it again.
Right.
And that was the image that he had developed, not because of anything he did, but then...
Well, the demand was greater than the amount of wine produced.
For sure.
Yeah. And it still is, actually. Here's the deal. The wine is still in greater demand than there is. And we're not we're not pushing wine. I mean, I did this as a fun sort of thing to let people know about the winery. So, and because of Dan asked me, you know, and Dan's a friend. So that's why I did it. I mean, we're doing fine, and I think it's, I want to get the wine into more people's mouths, so I do want them to be able to buy it off the shelf in certain places, and we'll talk about that later. And the fact is that's what they need to be able to do, take it home. I want you to take the Chardonnay home and drink it with your you know, self at home, whatever.
I will. Well, I two nights ago I made Linguini Vongole and took...
That would have been perfect with it.
Too bad. Oh, yes. This would be perfect with it. Unfortunately, I already finished it last night, but...
Those clams are gone, huh?
They are.
The thing to know about Dehlinger is it really is about the consistency. I mean, obviously, we've been tasting the wines, and you're not going to say bad things, but the fact is you've been pretty positive and upbeat, and Dan's known these wines for many, many years, and so have I. I mean, I'm living the dream here, just selling and drinking these wines and, you know, having these wines with great food at home. And that's what I want people to be able to realize, that they can get these wines. We'll figure out how that works later. But the fact is they can get these wines and take them home, and they will be blown away by the wine.
Yeah.
They will.
I think I am.
I think purists get a big kick out of this because there is a purity notion behind the way the wines go. They're varietal and they represent their region. And that's really important. Those two elements are critical to fine wine.
And they're not outrageously priced. Look, it costs money to farm the way they farm. It costs money to make the wood that they use, the quality of the products that they use, the corks that they use, the bottles.
Yeah.
It's all like the best, but the wines are still actually reasonably priced when you put them in perspective with all these different newbies that come on and just go outrageous with prices. So the wines are not unfairly priced for the quality and the amount, that the limited amount of wine that's produced off the property.
Plus, when you look at these prices and compare them to the rest of the marketplace, these are reasonably priced wines.
Totally.
The 2017 Goldridge Pinot Noir has a suggested retail price of $52. This is equal to about six different wines that I tasted last week that were all priced $70 a bottle.
And were no better.
No better. No, they were just slightly different. But,
right.
And they were all valid at $70. I said, well, you know, it's a lot of money, but hey, listen, that's what you have to pay to get a quality wine these days. And here, this 2017 Goldridge Pinot Noir from Dehlinger is as good as all the others, maybe better in some ways, and is $18 cheaper.
Well, and you go online and you see the press. Robert Parker has evaluated these wines over the last 25 years, and now Galleoni does it. The Wine Spectator, Eva was on the cover of the Wine Spectator. I mean, so the wines have always gotten those numbers. I don't really think about the numbers too much, but
plus, keep in mind that the marketplace has a way of changing, and there's limited availability of some of these wines. Hey, you didn't talk about
but
there's not very much of this.
No, there's not. Not for the general marketplace. I said that. I said about 20% goes out above and beyond what's available for the people who've been members for a long time of the family.
Wow.
So you do that, 8,000 versus, you know, 20%. So we're talking about 1,600 cases for the United States.
That's amazing.
Well,
I mean, that's...
You know, a high-quality winery in Sonoma County is not producing 30,000 cases. Let's be real.
Well, the thing about it is they could sell it all without having it exposed to the marketplace. But I believe that they want people to have a chance to taste these wines, and that's one of the things I'm here to try to help them do.
Have a great night, and thanks to Daryl Miller from Dehlinger Wines, and, of course, Dan Berger and Bottle Barn, California Wine Country. Have a great night.